Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. It doesn't matter whether you're making widgets or developing a cancer vaccine. Starting up a new company comes with lots of excitement and plenty of sleepless nights. And for those going into business for the first time, it's easy to make critical errors in judgment. But not Dr. Rajan Gupta. When he started SciMed, he teamed up with Dr. Tony Nujaim as his mentor through a special mentorship program developed by the Capital Region Innovation Center. And hybrid poplars, the search for a fast-growing tree with lots of fiber, is what keeps plant geneticist Dr. Barb Thomas busy. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. With all the emphasis these days on technology commercialization, researchers and inventors are required to also take on the mantle of entrepreneur, financier, and frontman. But when you're going into business in the biotechnology or IT sectors, for example, the stakes are high and the fall is long and hard for the neophyte. That's why the Capital Region Innovation Center started its mentorship program for fledgling technology companies. This year, the mentorship program is partnered with Grant MacEwan College in Edmonton. And the group is looking for both new tech companies and experienced business people to participate. SciMed Laboratories, Inc. is a new company that's gone through the program, and for founder Dr. Rajan Gupta, what he learned along the way has helped him realize his dream.
Oh, we are providing analytical testing service to agri-food and dairy industry, as well as to clinical industry. In addition to that, we are developing diagnostic kits for dairy industry, which has a big market potential right now, as well as to nutrition labeling requirements, which have currently become a law as per Health Canada guidelines.
How did you get into this?
Oh, basically, it's just that I'm entrepreneur by practice or so. And when I came to Canada about 11 years ago, I had this thing in my mind that I have to be on my own at one point in my career. So this is how I started this business.
Now, it hasn't really been easy. You have to get out there and get your ideas sold, and you have to get everything up and running, and you have to raise money to make all of these things happen. How is it that you've been able to do that?
Oh, yeah, it was tough initially. Like, we had very struggleful years in the beginning, but we just focused initially that the first year will concentrate on the instrumentation part, second year will concentrate on research and development and raising more money. And somehow we are successful. As of today, the way we planned about 4 years ago, it's going as planned.
Now, you've participated in a mentorship program that was initiated by the Capital Region Innovation Center. How did you get involved with that?
Yeah, for that, we are fortunate to have Brad Guthrie over here. He was the one who put me in contact with a mentorship program. And through that program, we came in contact with Dr. Tony Nujaim, who really provided us his expertise, especially from business point of view, that how we should take our company from this step where we were to the next level, not only to raise money, but other aspects of the business in the biotechnology industry.
Well, let's go into that in a little bit more detail. What exactly did you do? How would you meet with your mentor and talk about these things?
Again, in the beginning, Brad was the one who organized a meeting between myself, Tony Nujaim, and Brad, in Brad's presence. And from there, we discussed for over 2 hours. I just tried to get a feeling of what Dr. Tony Nujaim does and how he can help us out. And from there on, we are in contact with Dr. Nujaim through emails and phones, and he's always ready to help us whenever we needed his help, and it was really significant. And on top of that, Brad was always behind us to remind us or to know whether we are going in the right direction with our mentor.
Did it really make a difference for you? What if you hadn't gone through this program?
Yeah, if I hadn't gone through this program, I think some of the business ethics or business type of things which young biotech company faces, we wouldn't have been aware of these challenges, and we would have made some mistakes in the past, which we are fortunate that we didn't have to.
What do you think has been, say, the greatest benefit of having a mentor and going through this?
The main effect we had on our business plan, and we really feel that the business plan was really, really something which really was made in such a way that it was presentable with financial projections and all. And that made us, that was a critical step to go to AVEC for funding or to other investors, which we were dealing with, as well as the government agencies. So I feel business plan was really important, as well as the context which were provided by the mentors. They were really helpful.
Would you recommend this sort of program to others?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it is really, it's really a beneficial and neat program where I would say the recipient like us, they benefit more than the experienced mentors who provide this service, which otherwise would have been very, very costly for us.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
That was Dr. Rajan Gupta, founder of biotechnology company SciMed Laboratories, Inc. Rajan's mentor through those critical early days was Dr. Tony Nujame. The pair were introduced through a mentorship program developed by Brad Guthrie in the Capital Region Innovation Center. Tony Nujame is well known for his work on cancer treatments and chronic infections. He started one of the first biotech companies in Alberta, Altarex, and he's also the CEO of a new company. It's called Virex.
Virex is the new company on the block in here. It's been around actually for quite some time, but in a very quiet fashion, and now we're taking it to a higher gear. And the idea is to develop a series of therapeutic vaccines that can address chronic viral infections such as hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV, papillomavirus, and herpes. But originally, we are going to focus on hepatitis B and hepatitis C, which are major, major medical challenges today.
Now, when you look at your background and all the research you've been involved in and the different companies that you've started in order to, I guess, further that research and get it out into the public, how do you then develop the business sense that goes along with that?
This is a very good question. There are no two individuals who are alike. You have to have a certain amount of intuitive desire to develop a business. It's easy to say, I'm going to make a company. It takes only $100 and a trip to the lawyer and you have a registered company. But what happens after that is a different paradigm of anxiety and different levels of sleepless nights and so on. So really different people react differently in developing an idea through a company to success. There is no magic formula for that, absolutely no magic formula. You really have to be self-driven to get into this business.
How did you learn that? Did you have someone who mentored you along the way?
Trial and error. I made many mistakes. I lost a lot of money, but I also made a lot of money. The thing is, the key issue about that is risk management. How do you manage the risk that you're getting involved with? Some people take too much risk, some people don't understand the risk, and some people just are very careful. If you are very careful and you want a guaranteed black at the end of the balance sheet, then you should not be in this business, because our business is that of taking chances, taking risk, but in the meantime, calculating the risk that can take you to success. Like I keep saying, success is not really a matter of chance, but rather a matter of choice. So you should really make the choice that you're going to succeed at this.
You became involved in the mentorship program that the Capital Region Innovation Center had started up. Why did you become involved as a mentor?
I have a personal, you know, commitment to this, and it goes beyond the program or the existence of the program, because I recall 20 years ago when I started along this line, there was no one, absolutely no one, that could hold your hand in this field. And when I look back at these times, and I smile right now, but at the time I was almost pretty desperate, wishing someone could have given me some advice as what not to do, because everyone was telling me what to do, but no one ever told me what not to do, and I made many mistakes. So today, I feel like a personal commitment that many of these young entrepreneurs, very hard workers, tremendous ideas, terrific enthusiasm, these people could lose hope unless someone is prepared to sit down with them and give them that hope that they are going to succeed. So they look at role models, and I hope I could be a role model for some of them and help them succeed.
One of the companies that you've helped, that you've held their hand, has been SciMed. What was it like when they first came to you and the two of you got together?
I noticed a number of things. One, there was a lot of goodwill on the part of the management of SciMed. There was a lack of industrial discipline because they really didn't understand what it takes to make a product and to build a company. And another thing is that there was a lot of unrealistic targets that were set in their business plan. There's a lot of goodwill in that, saying I'm going to do this and this and this, but in true fact, when it gets down to the bottom line, it's very, very difficult to do them. And lastly, that there was a lot of loose ends in the business plan itself. So all of these things is just like a diamond in the rough. You can see it, you can feel it, but yet it needs to be polished. This is the way SciMed was when we started.
You saw all those things because you've been through it. But how did you actually get that point across to them?
Well, there got to be some chemistry between the two individuals that are involved, the CEO and the mentor. Because if there is a good chemistry, then one listens and the other one is prepared to volunteer. And the more you listen, the more the other person is prepared to volunteer. And I think that was the case, because with Dr. Gupta, you know, I found him to be a very charming individual, very willing, very hardworking, and also he listens. He wants to do the right thing. And so that encouraged me further to be able to interact with him and to pass on whatever I know to him. I know that he has acted on many, many of these recommendations, and I think it's going very well right now. The thing that we discussed in specifically acted upon was, one is to focus the company rather than having many, many directions to focus it on a particular area. Second thing is to develop a realistic business plan that can stabilize the company, stabilize the kind of product they're going to have. Another thing is to have a realistic milestone as to where we're going to reach certain areas. And lastly is to be able to get a good grip on the finances of the company. I think these were kind of one after the other put together over discussions, formal and informal, and I'm quite happy to see that it's finally taking shape and the company is moving forward now.
What is important about a business plan? What do you like to see in a business plan?
It's a tough question, but I will tell you what my view is. A business plan is not really a plan to raise money. It should never be considered as being the document that you are going to use just to raise money. Raising money is very, very important, very important. However, the business plan is a roadmap for the executive to follow for the next 2 to 3 years. That is exactly the objective of a business plan. Forget about raising the money. You have to really think internally and say, can I do this in 3 years' time with what kind of money? Because when you go and ask for money, the first question they're going to ask you is, what are you going to do with it? So you got to know. If I raise $2 million, I can do this, and this will be the milestone. But then you must have the roadmap for that. So you really have to understand the components of the business plan extremely well. It's not something you can copy from another business plan. That comes in from the guts, from the heart, from the knowledge of saying. And so consequently, when you set up a business plan, I advise people to go and ask others who have gone through this process and see if those points are realistic or not. And that puts a lot of credibility into the plan when you go and ask for money. So it is a roadmap. And I remember some of the business plans I have now were as good 4 years later as the day they were conceived 4 years before.
Is this something that you think other people should do? Should other people become mentors and become involved in the mentorship program?
I think it's a very good thing. I'm highly, highly supportive of this program for a number of reasons. One is Edmonton is a small community. It's not a big community. And by increasing the interactions between the various individuals involved will emerge eventually a corporate culture whereby companies can work together, individuals can work together. You cannot be in isolation in our business. You have to work together. And the mentorship program, I think, can achieve that. I'd like to thank Brad Guthrie for getting me involved in this. It was a challenge at the beginning. I'm enjoying it now. I hope this program continues.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
That was Dr. Tony Newshame, a founder of Virex Corporation and Alterex, and he's a mentor to SciMed Laboratories, Inc. If you're in the technology sector and you're in need of some good, solid advice, or if you're willing to lend someone the benefit of your years of experience, you may wish to become involved with the McEwen Mentorship Program. It's a partnership between Grant McEwen College and the Capital Region Innovation Center. It's 10 years since Alberta Pacific Forest Industries started its pulp mill in northeastern Alberta. And at the time, the company was thinking ahead about where else it might get trees or fiber rather than from the natural forest. The first stab at developing a hybrid poplar program began with seedlings collected from across Alberta and around the world. Some died, some survived. But the information gleaned from those early trials have laid the basis for what is now a sophisticated hybridization program led by plant geneticist Dr. Barb Thomas. I recently visited the various plots near the Alpac Mill where Barb is conducting her research.
Well, we moved down the field to look at a small block planting of two selected clones. One is called Walker and one is called Manitou. Walker is a female clone. These poplars come in male and female forms. They don't combine it onto one tree. Manitou is a male progeny of the Walker female. And there's rows here planted where each neighbor is itself. And so what we're trying to do in this type of a trial is actually get at what potential volumes are possible off a hectare of land. So in the earlier trials, we were looking at screening a whole bunch of different individuals with different genetic backgrounds to identify the more superior individuals. The next stage is to then look at how they perform on several sites to see whether or not that performance is consistent. And then you move to this type of a trial that we see in front of us, which is where you plant every individual to the same clone to look at volume production.
At this stage of the game, what are these particular trees telling you? How would you analyze them?
What we measure on these trees primarily is caliper or diameter at breast height, the diameter of the trees, and the height of the trees, and then we calculate volume based on that. When we track height and diameter over time, what we've seen is a change in performance between the two clones. There was virtually no difference in the height for many years between the two, but there was a significant difference in diameter. And there's now starting to also be a difference in height. So it is important to track these trees for an extended period of time to truly get a handle on what the growth and yield potential of each clone is. You need to track them from day zero through to what your rotation is going to be.
So is it the Manitou that is actually outperforming now?
The Manitou on this particular site is outperforming Walker. However, I know on other studies where these two clones have been planted together, that's not the situation. And that's why it's so important to test on more than one site and try and extrapolate to all sites that you may potentially plant to. Poplars are pretty unforgiving if you don't test where you're going to plant.
Barb and I quickly walk to the other side of the block where she points out the very visible evidence of adaptability.
These are the original hybrids that were put in the ground in 1993, and there's a lovely collection here of approximately 53 clones. And what you can see is the difference that the different backgrounds, species combinations of these clones, results in after this many years of testing. At the front of each of these rows, you can see a label that indicates the parentage or hybrid type. And there's quite a mixture out here. What you can also see is that is behind the one that's marked P times Interamericana, they're all dead. And the one of the parents in that background is a black poplar that comes from the coast, Populus trichocarpa. And as you can see, it doesn't do well here at all. However, in the first year, they were the best performing individuals in this trial. And that's why it's so important to test for multiple years, to look at that adaptability and winter survival. It's really our number one factor here, is to see how well these trees make it through the winter. And you can have several good years before you have a bad year that really lets you know who's going to be a winner and who isn't. With these hybrids, and for any introduced species that you work with, it's very important to test for about half a rotation to get a handle on whether you're going to be looking at a possible barrier to your poplar farming program or any other kind of species, even if it's conifer, moving ahead effectively and coming up short before they've grown to their full potential.
When you say half a rotation, how long is a normal rotation?
Well, that's a little bit up for debate. It can range for sure. We haven't gone a whole rotation yet, but we're targeting a range of between 18 to 25 years. Because we don't know when these trees are going to reach their maximum potential on these particular sites, and if there's advantage to carrying them a little bit longer, we need that flexibility to understand how much volume we're going to get off and when we can take it off.
After 10 years of trials, one species is beginning to stand out. Barb takes me over to a clump of Chinese aspen growing among the straight rows of aspen and poplar.
We're now in a collection of trees that is supplying material for our new phase of the program, which is our own breeding. And the Chinese aspen is Populus davidiana, and this is a particular species which breeds with our native Tremuloides in allows us to produce some of those hybrids that we were talking about, where one of the parents is native. This is really the second phase of the program here at LPAC, is to move into our own selections and breeding. The first phase really depended on existing clones and shelter belt trees, and that's what's allowed the operations to get off the ground and moving. The next phase here is looking at the future of what we may be planting in another 10 or 15 years, moving the program ahead. As I indicated on that previous tree that we looked at that had so many branches, that would not be a preferred form. And so through doing our own breeding, we're going to be able to screen seedlings and individuals for other characteristics that are more important for this particular mill.
What would be the ultimate tree shape?
Oh, a nice crown at the top with very little branching, a very straight stem, and a high-quality fiber, but you can't see that from the outside.
Through her trials, Dr. Barb Thomas has seen the potential for the Chinese aspen in the hybridization program. In a plot up the road, we look at the reproductive success of the Chinese aspen progeny.
This is a landrace trial of another collection of the davidiana species that we looked at in the other trial.
That's the Chinese tree?
That's the Chinese aspen, yes. And these seed lots came from China. We have 30 different seed lots here. And what makes it a landrace trial is that we're testing for adaptability here of this parent material that we're hoping to use in the future for breeding. The reason I brought you here is I wanted to show you that one of the activities we do each fall with these exotic trees is to see whether or not they have set reproductive buds. And by evaluating them, we can then plan for the winter's breeding program. And when I was out here a couple of weeks ago, I saw that this particular tree, this male, had reproductive buds set already.
How can you tell it's a male?
You can see on this branch, it's quite nice. It's not such an old tree that the buds are too high for us to look at. At the tip of each of the twigs is a vegetative bud. It's quite small, and behind it and further down the stem are larger buds that look like little miniature eggs, basically, like a chocolate egg. And when you open these up, you can take them apart and look at them under the microscope and see that they are, in fact, males. They're very easy to tell. If you look up the tree, you can see the little blobs of buds all the way around it. And once you get an eye for it, you can pick these out quite easily as you walk through the trial. Because these are seedlings, we don't know whether an individual is male or female until it actually blooms. And this trial just started to bloom 2 years ago as well. And it's big enough that we could actually take branches off it to do our breeding.
What do you actually do now that you know that the little buds are there?
Poplars are wonderful to work with for this type of breeding because you can take a branch of the tree and put it in a bucket of water in January, February, and these buds will open and flower. And we can collect the pollen off the males and place them onto the female buds when they're ready by doing the same procedure with the females. You bring them in a week later so that they're staggered and the females are flowering and are receptive a little bit later than after you collect the pollen. Then they set seed, and you can collect it within the time frame of these branches just being in a bucket of water. It's quite fantastic.
Across the road, Barb has moved into yet another stage for the hybridization programs. And with her seedlings set out to test the elements, she still has to fight Mother Nature to make sure her experiments don't disappear as someone's tasty treat.
It's a fenced field, which is very nice because it means that you don't have moose and deer biting the tops of the trees off and messing up your data for height and things like that. So it's a really nice field to work in. The trial we're looking at here is what I call a phase one trial. It's new genetic material that we accessed through a membership in a cooperative. And the trees have been in the ground since 98. And you can see lots of patches in here. And that's where some of the individuals, like in field one, didn't make it through the winter here. But we've selected 36 individuals that have shown good performance. And these are poplars, so we were able to take cuttings of the branches from those 36 individuals and put them into a little production bed to get more copies of those individuals to put into the next phase of testing. So the next phase would mean taking replicate copies of those selected 36 trees and planting them on different sites to see whether or not they perform well on a variety of sites, so a slightly sandier site, maybe a richer site, whatever the sites we think are going to be the target ultimately for planting them on operationally, if they make it through the other phases of screening.
That was Dr. Barb Thomas, plant geneticist and coordinator of the Poplar Farm Research Program for Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Capital Region Innovation Centre, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Ingenuity, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Research Council, the University of Lethbridge, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.